Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast. Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la
bonne
fois, ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, leur 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they work the young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
The Sick Podcast on this Wednesday, March 20. Thanks for watching, everyone, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel yet on The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro, please do so. Tell your friends about it. The more, the merrier. We are getting ourselves quite the community going with the Sick Army and the Sick community, and I thank you very much for that. The Sick Podcast brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. Also brought to you in part by the people behind me right in that fridge right over there. That's actually LaBee.TB, brewed in Quebec, winner of a dozen international awards. LaBee.TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBee.TB, embrace your true nature. And also brought to you in part by Playground. This Friday, March 22nd, and Saturday, March 23rd, don't miss the ultimate tribute to Queen Flash. This fabulous Queen tribute puts on an exciting high-energy show that captures the essence of a band that transformed the world of music. They will rock you. Playground, your ultimate destination for entertainment, just over the Mercier Bridge. Only minutes from downtown Montreal, visit playground.ca. For more details, visit the strip without the trip. All right, there you have it. Without further ado, let's bring in one of my favorite collaborators in the history of the Sick Podcast, which has been going on now for a couple of years. He is also co-host of the Sick Podcast, The Eye Test, and he does that with Jimmy Murphy, Pierre Maguire. Good evening, Pierre.
Tony, so nice to see you again. Twice in 2 weeks, Tony. We were at Hurley's last week together, and now here we are again. You're in Montreal, and I'm in Lake Placid, New York.
It was a lot of fun to see you, Pierre, because I don't remember when was the last time I saw you, but there's still, A, you are very much in shape, as you always have been, and B, I am still very much out of shape. So anyway, we got that out of the way. Pierre, I'm a big fan of the Sick Podcast, The Eye Test. I pick and choose, like everyone else does, the podcasts that I watch, and I can tell you that there's probably about five of them that I watch every day religiously, and The Eye Test is one of them. I was obviously particularly interested yesterday when VP of Hockey Ops of the Montreal Canadiens, Jeff Gorton, joined you and Jimmy because of the type of show that I do, obviously a Montreal Canadiens show. There was a lot of information there, Pierre, but the one, you know, one of the things that I gathered, which I already imagined, you and him are pretty close, huh? I see. I felt a lot of respect there.
We've been close for a while. I really admire the way Jeff got into the business. It wasn't easy for him. He really didn't have a hockey background per se as a player. He never had as a coach. He had to really start at the bottom and work his way up. I've always admired that. Tony, it's one of the reasons why I have so much respect for you. I remember when you used to call us on the radio, and I said, this guy's actually going to be really good. And eventually, look at what it parlayed you into. Just an amazing career. So I admire the underdog. I admire the people that really have to work to get to where they get to. And Jeff, I will never forget, Tony, he got fired and I called him the next day and I said, look, I feel terrible for you. This was really gross what happened to you in New York. And I said, why don't we go to my golf club and have lunch? And we did. And I'm going to say we sat there for probably 2.5 to 3 hours having lunch. It was an awesome, awesome time. But the thing that I took out of that was the respect he had for the process he had begun with John Davidson in New York, and that he was convinced it was going to work, and that he wasn't going to take shots at anybody in the Rangers organization who may have done ill to him and eventually getting him fired. He never took any runs at anybody. I really, really respect that about Jeff.
Pierre, I think we have a pretty good idea. We've heard some rumblings that Jeff Gordon didn't approve of the ownership of the New York Rangers calling out the league a couple of years ago when they did. The word on the street has probably placed a couple of phone calls and said, look, I'm sorry that came out. We don't really feel that way. There was also a time when some people thought that the Rangers were, you know, probably had not assembled the most physical team. But if you could put it down to something more than any other reason, why was he let go in New York? He was building something there, Pierre.
He was. I'm going to say that internally, after a Washington Capitals New York Ranger game, when Tom Wilson really ran roughshod over the Rangers, somebody internally said, this is the flaw in what he's doing. He's not doing it the right way. And he and John Davidson can't stay because they believe that their way is the right way. And so it was the next morning that Jeff got called in, and then John got called in, and they both got released. And believe it or not, the next day I did a game in New York, and the next afternoon after that game, I had lunch with Jeff. So I would say a lot of it came down to the perception internally by whomever it was, that the team was not going to be rigorous or robust enough, Tony. And I think that's what led to his being dismissed in New York.
All right. I think we're less than a month from when Jarmo Kekäläinen was relieved of his duties as general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mm-hmm. And because of his relationship with John Davidson, it led some people to bring up Jeff Gordon's name, saying, you know what? He's probably going to get a call from John Davidson. I'm wondering, Pierre, because working for the Montreal Canadiens is obviously huge, mm-hmm. But he doesn't have the GM title, which he would probably want to have, depending on who you ask. Do you think there's a risk that the Montreal Canadiens will lose Jeff Gordon to a team like Columbus?
I have a hard time believing that. I have not talked to Jeff about that on or off the record, Tony. I think your question's fair, but I don't know the answer. And if I did, I would tell you. I think he's really happy with the relationship he has with Ken Hughes. One thing I can tell you, having gone through rebuilds, both positive ones and negative ones, the reason they get negative is internally one person or two people, or maybe more than that, don't believe the rebuild's going properly. And then everybody starts going in their own direction. It's like survival of the fittest. And that's when the rebuild fails. But I think the relationship between Jeff Gordon, Jeff Molson, and Kent Hughes is really tight. I don't know it to be anything but tight. And when that happens like that, usually the rebuild gets done quickly. And I think that's what's going to happen in Montreal. Tony, you watched the game last night against Edmonton.
Yeah.
You can't fault their character. You can't fault their effort. You can't fault their desire to play for one another. Pezzetta's fight with Sam Carrick is all about that. There's a lot of good stuff going on there. That's got to be encouraging for them because it shows that they're starting to get the pieces that you have to win. And their defense is going to be rock solid for a decade, probably.
Yeah. You're right, Pierre. They could have checked out when you would have understood if they did, right? They're not going to make the playoffs. Their coach is not there right now. They're missing a big piece like Kirby Dach. They're going up against a very good team in the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton. They're down a couple of goals. I could have got away from them, but they mm-hmm. chose not to make it happen so that they can take that step in that right direction for that culture that they're trying to build. You know, Pierre, I want to get back to Jeff Gordon for a second. I don't know Jeff very well. I've had him on the podcast once before. He seems like a salt of the earth kind of guy. Mm-hmm. I have no inside information on what I'm going to tell you. It's just my way of reading the room from afar. For those who think that Jeff Gordon will end up in Columbus, I mean, if he does, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I wouldn't bet on it. And I wouldn't bet on it because he and Kent Hughes, they set out to accomplish something and they haven't done it yet. And until they give it their best shot and see if they're able to pull it off, I don't see him leaving for something where there's unfinished business here.
I would agree. This is how I view it too. And I didn't include Marty when I talked about Jeff Molson and Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes, but Marty's a big part of that too. They all came together. Kent, you know, speaks eloquently about Marty, but I can tell you, Jeff Gordon speaks as eloquently or more eloquently than Kent does about Marty St. Louis. So again, they're all singing from the same songbook. And when you do that, it speeds everything up. And when there's harmony in the workplace, when you're going through tough times, it makes everything a little bit easier to digest. It really does.
Pierre, when Marc Bergevin was hired as GM of the Montreal Canadiens, if memory serves me well, the press conference took place on the 2nd of May, 2012, but I could be off by a couple of days. You were interviewed for that job.
More than once.
And I've always wanted to ask you something, and now I think is the perfect time to ask it. Mm-hmm. When Jeff Molson relieved Pierre Gauthier of his duties and he met with the media, I remember the press conference like it was yesterday, and he talked about the things that he would be looking for in their next general manager, and he talked about hiring someone who would be able to win consistency in the long term, but be able to turn it around in the short term. And by his wording, it didn't sound like he encouraged a rebuild at the time. When you had your interview, were you told, Pierre, what's your plan? What do you think you'll do with this team? But a rebuild is out of the question? Or was a rebuild on the table? Was Jeff Molson able to be convinced of a rebuild at the time? Because based on his press conference before hiring the GM, it didn't sound like he wanted to go that route, Pierre.
No, it wasn't a rebuild, though. It was a retool. There were certain things that had to be done. Jeff was really amenable to the planning. I can tell you the people on, I had, I think, three or four interviews, if I remember correctly. A couple of them were on the phone. Some were face-to-face. The last one was at the airport Marriott Hotel in a boardroom. In the room was Kevin Gilmore, Michael Ann Lauer, Jeff Molson, and Serge Savard. That was the last. I think that was the third or the fourth one. And basically put your cards on the table. And we talked about, you know, players that I thought were going to be important parts of the team, players that I thought weren't going to be part of the team going forward, and how we were going to manage cap issues going forward and the type of style we wanted to play, the types of coaches we wanted to try to hire and approach, the type of minor league system we wanted to run. So it was an all-encompassing last interview. And one of the things I told them was, we have to get back to playing an aggressive form of attack-oriented offensive hockey. In order to do that, we have to trade for players that can play that way and draft players that are going to play that way. I talked about the importance of development, and one of the biggest things I thought at the time were not enough players in the NHL. Now we're going back to 2011, 2012. Not enough players that were playing in the NHL were getting better as players in the NHL. They were good players, but they weren't getting better. We needed to find a way to make players better during the course of an NHL season. So I had a plan for that, and I don't want to get long-winded on it, but I explained that to them as well. I thought it went really well. About 2 days later, I think, I was in Toronto to do a game with Gordon Miller. I was at the Westin Hotel. I got a call probably around 8:30, and Jeff said, you're the runner-up, and we're going to announce the general manager tomorrow, but I wanted you to know you were the runner-up. And I said, thank you. I appreciate it. I really enjoyed the process. And I talked to, I think, everybody else on the committee at some point, whether it was Serge or Kevin Gilmore or Mr. Ann Lauer and for sure Jeff Molson. They were first class. Everybody that was involved in that process, I had no complaints. I had zero complaint about anything that went on.
I find this stuff riveting, by the way. But, you know, it's funny, Pierre, based on what you just told me here, what the Canadians are doing right now with Jeff Gordon, Kent Hughes, and Marty St. Louis, yeah, and that is development at the National Hockey League level, which is something that some people in the National Hockey League believe that you cannot pull off, because the National Hockey League is a production league and not a development league. I think the Canadians have actually shown that they can pull it off. If you take a look at the development with Suzuki, if you take a look at the development with Slafkovsky, with Gouley, and others, you were onto that 12 years ago.
Yeah, I thought in order to survive in the cap world, you had to have younger players that weren't making max contracts. And so you had to hasten the development, get them out of junior maybe a little earlier, get them out of the American Hockey League a little earlier, get them out of Europe a little earlier. And the only way you could do that and sell it and make it work was maybe to, because coaches don't count on the cap, development people don't count on the cap, strength and conditioning guys don't count on the cap, to bring in maybe one or two extra people on your staff and help them build those players. And, you know, Tony, I don't want to get too much into it because I'm really happy with where my life has gone and everything else.
Got it.
I would have loved that job. The last place I worked in the NHL in management was in Ottawa. I wanted to implement those ideologies in Ottawa. I wasn't allowed to, after being told I was going to be allowed to. So, you know, I move on, but I do see more teams spending time trying to do that, Tony. And you can see Colorado is a good example. Tampa Bay is another good example of teams that have brought younger players in and they've gotten better. Those younger players have gotten better.
Well, Pierre, thank you for giving us the information that you did. I think it was very informative because not everyone knows the story. And now I think they know a lot more than they knew before you actually told us. So thank you for that. Okay.
Thank you.
Speaking of a rebuild, you and Jimmy asked him about the Rangers rebuild and the way he pulled it off. Here's a clip from yesterday's The Sick Podcast, The Eye Test with Jeff Gordon.
You know, before you got to Montreal, you were part of a rebuild with the Rangers there. And, you know, Pierre and I have discussed this before, how much we loved what you guys did, you know, writing that letter to the fans, letting everybody know what was coming and this is how we're going to do it. And you laid it out there. How much did that experience help you when you took on the job you're doing now?
Well, I think it helps me every day, right? It still helps me, right? I have, there's a lot of things that happen there that are happening now, right? And, you know, when, as you build a team, like Pierre knows, you're trying to build a team and put people in these spots and see if it works. You know, having that and knowing, you know, some of the deals we made, some of the players we brought into New York and how it's worked out and what kind of team they have, you know, it certainly gives me confidence going forward to know that, you know, we can handle it here in Montreal too.
So Pierre, telling us what you told us, do you think that they're going to try and assemble the same kind of team that plays the same way the Rangers did, or they'll add some of that toughness that some people thought lacked in the organization at the time here in Montreal? What would be your guess on that?
I think one of the things Jeff's really good at is evaluating trends in the league. It's a really important concept. So one of the trends now is depth players who skate really well, but also are extremely physical. The better teams have an array of those players. They're not always fighters, but they're physical guys. Brandon Duhaime, Yakin Trenoff, in Colorado, guys like that. So I think when you look at it, you look, Sam Carrick in Edmonton, there's a good example. I think Jeff knows they've got to do a little of that fine-tuning in Montreal, Tony. I think he will. Pezzetta's a good example. I mean, he's a guy that will do what he has to do for the team to keep his job as well. And so I think the Canadiens understand that you have to have that. There's a balance, and I would look for them. You know, he talked about adding college free agents. There are some college free agents that play that way. Now, it's going to take them a little longer to get up to NHL tempo, but I think there's some guys that are out there that can do that, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Canadiens signed somebody like that.
Obviously, he's a different talent, but do you think there was some of that behind the Slafkovsky pick saying, you know what, we got Suzuki, he's about 5'11", we got We got Gallagher, he's 5'9". We got Caulfield, he's 5'7". There's RV Pinard, he's probably about 5'9". There's a lot of players at the forward position who are not overly big, overly physical. Let's get this bigger guy to kind of complement that group, so to add some much-needed size. Do you think that was part of the equation in terms of drafting Slafkovský?
I do. I think, too, the element of power forward is never really understood. You know, a lot of times power forwards develop a little bit more slowly than guys that are elite skill players. Slafkovský, in his case, his draft year, he's playing on the third line in Turku. I spent a lot of time there. I used to see Marty Lapointe, the chief scout for the Canes, over there a ton. And I can tell you that that kid never played. Like, he might have played 8 to 11 minutes a game with no power play time. So his real development took place when he was named MVP at the Olympics in Beijing, because that's where he was actually thrown into the fray. And so when the Canes got him, he was far from a finished product. Now you see him as a 19-year-old, and you're like, what's this guy going to be like when he's 23, Tony? He's going to dominate the league. You know, he's going to dominate the league. So power forwards just take a little bit longer. But to answer your question, I think, yes, the Canes had that in mind when they drafted him.
Pierre, the toughest part I would imagine for a general manager is to assemble a top six, to assemble a top three on defense, to make sure you have that number one goaltender. But yet, the third and fourth line players become very essential in a team's success if you want to win the Stanley Cup one day. You talked about Luke Tuck yesterday with Jeff Gordon, and I know you mentioned that you thought that Luke would probably be in Laval next season. Is he a guy that could end up being an energy player on a Canadiens third line or fourth line in a couple of years from now?
Yeah, when they took him in the second round of the 2020 draft, I thought he was one of the steals. I had coached Luke in a bunch of different summer events. I also watched my son play against him when he played for Syracuse, and my son played at Mid Fairfield, which are two of the preeminent Eastern Coast youth hockey programs. They're both elite programs. So I've been watching Luke play since he's been 9 years old. And I thought when the Canes got him, it's great. It's college hockey's hard, Tony. It's really hard to score in college hockey. The fact that Macklin Celebrini has 29 goals in, you know, whatever, 34 games or 35 games is amazing to me as a 17-year-old. So I think Luke can play that way. The biggest problem for Luke is doing it all the time. And I think part of that was he had injury issues when he was in college, especially to his back. If he can do that, he can definitely be one of those players. Definitely be one of those players.
Why is it so hard to score goals in college hockey?
Because you got a bunch of kids playing against a bunch of men. There are a lot of 23 and 24-year-old men playing against 18 and 19-year-olds. That's a big difference in terms of growth and maturity and speed. The fact that Celebrini can do it, I'll give you an example. Both guys played at BU. Macklin Celebrini is the same age as Brady Tkachuk when Brady played there. Brady had 8 goals. He had 8 goals his freshman year. This guy's got 29. That's not even close. And I will tell you this. Macklin Celebrini's shot, he's a left-hander, and he plays on the right side in the power play. So he plays in the Ovechkin role, but on the other side. I'm not saying his shot's Ovechkin, but I'm going to tell you one thing right now. It's as precise as anybody I've ever seen shoot the puck from that side of the ice on a one-timer.
Wow. Like
he's so refined and so precise. He can beat you short side. He can beat you long side. He can beat you along the ice. And very seldom is his shot blocked. It's amazing what he's able to do. He's definitely a generational player. There's no question in my mind he's a generational player.
So Luke Tuck, in your opinion, as you look in your crystal ball, will play with the Laval Rocket next season. And there's a chance at him being a Montreal Canadian the year after that. Is that accurate? Yep. Or?
Who knows? I mean, if he goes there and play, some guys play better in pro than they do in college, you know, Tony. It's just because the pro game's so different. It's so controlled. He may be able to go there and maybe play 40 games and come up. I don't know. But I know Luke Tuck he played with Celebrini at the beginning of the season, and he played really well. But here's what I know about Luke. Luke is big. Luke can skate. Luke is coachable. Luke's a good teammate, and Luke can score. He's got subtle hands, way better hands than people think. And so I just look forward to him actually, when BU's season's over, whenever that might be, him getting a chance to sign and go get his feet wet a little bit in the American League and find out what the league's all about.
You also asked Jeff Gordon about goaltender Jacob Fowler. Let's watch.
And what about Jacob Fowler?
He's, I mean, obviously impressive. He's a, you know, their rival, and maybe someone's going to be getting their way, right? But for him as a freshman to do what he's done is pretty incredible. You know, there's not too many goalies that have come in and done that at BC, number one team in the country, world junior. So it's been impressive. You know, really happy for our scouting staff to come up with that, to follow him and think so highly of him, to take him where we did. And you know, it's always nice when, you know, 12 months after you take him, you're looking and saying, this is going to be a good one.
And when you're seeing a kid like Fowler, how impressive, you were referencing it kind of there, but just his ability to almost play even better when the spotlight's on and when he's in a big moment. We've seen it in different situations so far. How impressed have you been in that respect?
Well, I mean, when we drafted him, we sat down with him in the suite after. He is the most talkative guy I think I've ever met.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
And he's got this, you know, the word now in hockey, swagger. And he's got it, right? And he wants to be the guy. He wants that limelight. So right away, when we're going through the process with him, talking about him, everybody talked about the personality and could handle it. The fact that he won, it was so, he was such a huge part of what they were doing in the USHL to win it all, right? So you always like goalies that have won, that have a track record of winning, right? Mm-hmm. Because in the end of the day, that's how we're all judged. And the fact that he was doing it at a level. So where he's come from in Florida, you know, driving 2-3 hours to practices and doing everything he did, a really committed kid, but a fun kid to be around. He's different, you know, he's a goalie. Definitely when you talk to him, you can tell he's a goalie.
Pierre, I thought that was an awesome clip because you're the one who asked the question, what about Jacob Fowler? And then I'm looking at, you know, the split screens. Jimmy Murphy's got a smile on his face. It goes to you, who has a bigger smile on his face. And Jeff Gordon's got the biggest smile on his face because obviously his team drafted Jacob Fowler. We've heard from a lot of people, and we've heard you tell us how good you think he is, Pierre. But you talked about how hard it is to score goals in college hockey. And I remember, and I'm, you know, I hope he's as great as everyone says he is. But my question is, I remember Primo having great stats with Northeastern as well. Is there a concern that because it's such a hard league to score goals in, that maybe goalies are not as great as their stats?
Fair question. And I think there's some merit to it. But here's where I would add a little bit more on Jacob Fowler. Experience at the World Junior. And he and Trey Augustine were the goalies for Team USA. Augustine's a draft pick of the Detroit Red Wings. He plays for Michigan State. They've had an amazing year at Michigan State. They're playing in the Big Ten final this weekend against University of Michigan. But those two goalies for the United States are elite. Tony, they're elite. But your point is well taken, and that's why I throw the World Junior experience in there, because that's a way different animal than college hockey. The World Junior is a tournament of mistakes and elite skill. College hockey's big bodies, really fast, and amazingly well coached because you have 5 days to prepare for your next opponent. So it makes it different. But I would say in the case of Jacob Fowler, I've seen him play mediocre games, but when the game's on the line and he has to deliver, he does. I've also seen him play elite games where it's almost like he's playing in a rocking chair. He's just so comfortable, calm, cool, and collected.
So if you were the Canadians, what would the next couple of years look like for Fowler?
I will say this. Their coach, Greg Brown at Boston College, today was named Hockey's Coach of the Year. I think they've got a legitimate chance to win the NCAA tournament. I believe if they win the NCAA tournament, well, they're going to lose a whack of players. I believe if they don't win the NCAA tournament, they're probably going to have a lot of guys come back. So I would be reading off of it. If they won, I might try to get Fowler out now and give him one full year of the ball in the American League. And then I think that he's going to be pretty darn close to being ready to play, Tony.
Wow. So if they could win the NCAA, you'd get Fowler to Laval next season.
Yep.
Give him most of the workload.
60 games.
60 games.
Mm-hmm.
And then in your opinion, he's NHL ready the year after that.
You're going to be really close, Tony. It's going to be really, really close. You don't like to rush goalies. And what I do, again, you had probably have it in front of you. I study these things on contract lengths. I think Montembeau after this year has 2 years left, if I'm not mistaken, maybe three.
I believe he signed a three-year deal at 3.15 million. So it's 3 years after this year, Pierre.
So there would be two after if Fowler were to come out, there'd be two left. And you know, you look at Primo, the fact they were able to trade Jake Allen, I think there's a spot there where eventually Fowler can fit in. So yes, I wouldn't be afraid to do it. Now they may say we're gonna let him go back and play on maybe not so good a Boston College team and see what he's got. But the one thing I wouldn't want to mess with this guy, only if he came to me and said, you know what, I'd really like to turn pro, I'd do it. I would do it. I'd take him out. The reason why I think what happened between Cutter Gauthier and Philadelphia is Cutter Gauthier said, I want to come out. And Philadelphia said, well, we don't think you're ready to come out. And that's where I think he said, really, you don't respect me enough or you don't respect me. And that's where I think there's a fallout there. And I don't think you want to have that with an elite prospect like Fowler.
So Jacob Fowler, highest ceiling.
Oh, he's
a for the Canadians since Carey Price.
He'll be a star. I believe he will be a starting goalie in the NHL. And when I say starting, you know, winning goalie in the NHL.
Awesome stuff, Pierre. Okay, Lane Hutson. Since we're talking about so many of these prospects, you've had a chance to see him a ton. Here's Jeff Gordon talking about Lane Hutson.
Hey, Jeff, on where Lane is right now and where Luke is right now.
It's been a good experience to having a son there and somebody that wants to be in hockey someday. So he gives me all the scoops, but, Lane, we'll start with him. He's, obviously last year burst on the scene and really good season. But I find this year, I think those guys have done a really good job rounding out his game. Right. So we know he has the offense, the potential to be that power play guy. Has always been there, but those guys have him moving the puck quicker, defending. You saw in the World Junior too. You know, I thought they did a really good job of toning it down and having him on the ice a lot and defending really well, working on his game. And you know, a big part of that gold medal. So we all know he has the offense, but he's smarter than a lot of people think, and he can defend way better than they think too.
Wow. You know, one of the things that stood out to me in that clip, it's not even about Hutson. Last week at Hurley's Irish Pub on Thursday, you and Jimmy were taking questions from the viewers. And one viewer asked, Pierre, who do you think the Canadians will draft considering where they'll draft and what their needs are? And without any hesitation, you said Cole Yzerman. And then you said, is going to be you. Hutson is there. Tuck is there. They know the coaches. He'll play in the Beanpot. He'll play in some significant games. Cole Yzerman. When I hear Jeff Gordon talk about what the staff has done for Lane Hutson's game, it says to me that they're very comfortable with the staff that's in place and they believe their players are in good hands over there. And I thought of when you said Cole Yzerman a week ago, and I don't know if the Canadians pick will be Cole Yzerman or not, but if it is, or if it will be, it makes sense.
Yeah, that's why I went down that road. Jay Pandolfo is the head coach of the Boston University Terriers, and he learned his trade in New Jersey. You know, think about it. And so you look at the Montreal Canadian influence that's gone through New Jersey, whether it was Jacques Lemaire, Larry Robinson, Pat Burns. One of the things Lou Lamoriello always preached to me, there were two organizations that he believed in. One were the Montreal Canadiens, the other the Boston Celtics. He thought that their standards, those two organizations, their standards were so good, Tony, that he wanted to utilize them to build his brand, his organizations. So he did a combo of Red Auerbach and Frank Selke and Sam Pollock. That's what he's done. Everywhere Lou's gone. So Jay Pandolfo grew up in that type of environment. He knows the Montreal Canadian way, even though it probably hasn't been represented to him that way. But so I would say that Jay's really good. I can tell you, I talked to Jay a fair bit, and I think he's done magnificent work at Boston University. He's done a great job with the players that he's had to coach this year. Celebrini's a perfect example. Hudson's example. Tuck's example. They've done some really good things there. Really, really good things at BU.
And Lane Hudson, defensively, is better than people think, Jeff Gordon says. To that, you say what?
He is. But I'm going to be fair here on this because I don't want to overextend the expectation on the player. He is better, but he's not big, Tony, and he's not heavy. And so when you're playing against men that have mortgages and car payments and families to feed, and this is their way of life, that's a way different animal than playing against college guys. And so I don't know if he's stout enough at this point. He's got to gain another 15 pounds to be that stout defender that they need to play. I think
you should come live with me. Tony, gain it in a week.
I think what will happen is the Canadiens will be a team that plays 11 forwards and 7 D. I really do. And I think that he'll be that power play specialist. He'll be the guy late in the game if you're down a goal, late in the period if you're down by 2 goals. He's on the ice pushing the pace from the back end. He's that good offensively. Tony, he's the real deal offensively. He really, truly is.
As someone who's coached in the National Hockey League and been a GM and worked in the National Hockey League at every level, when you hear former defensemen say, oh, don't talk to me about 7D. I hated it. You say what?
It worked in Tampa. They went to the Stanley Cup final 3 times in a row. They won it 2 out of 3 times. You know, here's the way I learned from Scotty Bowman. General managers manage, coaches coach, scouts scout, players play. Just play. Don't worry about all the stuff around you. Just go play. That's what I would
I'm
say.
That's going to be on my next t-shirt, by the way. General managers manage, coaches coach, scouts scout, and players play. No truer words, huh? I mean, that's pretty appropriate, big time.
That's okay. How you win. So, that's how you win, Tony. That's how you win. I'm telling you, the Canadiens forever. Think about some of the scouts they had over time. Del Wilson controlled the West, excuse me. Ronnie Caron and Cliff Fletcher controlled Quebec and Ontario. You know, Doug Robinson controlled Ontario and Toronto and London and the western part of Ontario. Like, if you look at when the Canadiens were winning all these things, Claude Ruel knew so many good young players. He's a guy that convinced Sam Pollock to take Guy Lafleur, taking an 18-year-old Mario Tremblay. I can go down the line. The Canadiens scouts understood. They scout. Sam Pollock knew he managed. Scotty Bowman knew he coached. The players knew there was one boss here, 3 or 4 bosses at the scouting, and then they had to play. They knew. There were clearly defined chains of command, and it works. It does work, Tony.
He was. He talked about Nick Suzuki.
Yep.
I feel like Nick Suzuki, to watch him every night, people, if they really dial into it, he's a special player, right? Yeah. His development to be a full 200-foot player, how good he really is. If you watch him night in and night, like, I'm sure Pierre would add on, but special player, like, right? Slavkovsky is starting to come, right? Gouley is a really good defenseman, right? Mike Matheson had a great year. Montembeau. There's a lot of good things happening. Josh Wall, we brought him up, and he looks like he could be an NHL player here for a while. So there's a lot of good things happening. And then outside of the NHL, we have Reinbacher, who's coming over now, and Mayu's doing well, and some other things really exciting happening. So I feel like the players can feel that, and that's fueling us. I feel like we have the right coach for us that understands how to get guys better, understands the environment they need to be taught in. He has a certain way of wanting us to play, and we all agree with it. So I feel like everything's going the right direction, and the time is coming.
Pierre, I thought it was really cool of Jeff Gordon to say, you know, we're trying our best here, but let's be honest. Marc Bergevin did leave us with some pretty good players, right? This thing was not completely empty when we got here. And Nick Suzuki was one of those players, mind you, the Canadians asked for Cody Glass when that trade was done, and Vegas said no, but we'll offer up Nick Suzuki. At least that's what we're hearing through hockey circles. But Pierre, I want to talk about Bergevin for a second. When he gave Nick Suzuki that 8-year deal at $7.875 million per season, a lot of people said, whoa, the sample size is not very big on this player to be committing 8 years and that kind of money. And before Bergevin left, he said to me, Tony, Nick Suzuki is going to be a number one centerman for a long time, and the Montreal Canadiens now have their number one centerman. Mark Bergevin knew. Pierre, how did he know so soon? What are some of the things, like, what are some of the things you think he was looking at? What are some of the things you were looking at with Suzuki? I mean, there's still members of the fan base that are asking if he's a number one centerman. I hope by now they stopped asking, but that was a pretty good move of Mark Bergevin to know that soon that Nick Suzuki was going to be a number one centerman in the National Hockey League.
Usually top centermen have certain characteristics. One is escapability when they have the puck in their stick. Suzuki has it. Two is peripheral vision. Can they make the players around them better? Nick Suzuki has that in spades. Three, can they create off the rush with tempo? Nick Suzuki does that unbelievably well. Four, can they shoot the puck to the back of the net? Nick Suzuki can do that. So those four qualities are usually really apparent in top-end centers. So I'll use an example. Connor McDavid, all those things I just said, does he have it? He has it. Nathan MacKinnon, you see him play? He has it. Alexander Barkov down in Florida, he has it. Mika Zibanejad, New York Rangers, he has it. Jack Hughes down in New Jersey, he has it. So it's four things you look for. Now, I always felt, having watched Suzuki play junior and watched him a little bit, obviously, in Montreal, the year they played Vegas in the COVID year playoffs, I felt the player at that time, and I said it on NBC, reminded me of Joe Sakic when Joe was young in Quebec. There were so many similarities in terms of body type, how they manufactured offense off the rush, the ability to make the wingers better, shoot the puck. Joe Sakic had an amazing release, by the way. People probably don't remember that, but he would come down the right side of the ice and he could absolutely launch the puck. So I look at that and I said, this is what this guy reminds me of. I don't know if Bergevin thought about Sakic, but that's who I thought he always reminded me of.
Yeah. I guess he was also pretty convinced when he saw him in his final year of the playoffs in the OHL, right? When he led his team to the championship and was the leading goal scorer in the MVP. All right, okay. Now the big question is, a lot of people are asking themselves, when do they start adding to the group? Pierre, I believe that because of Josh Anderson's contract and Brendan Gallagher's contract, which take up a total of $12 million a year and will be for the next three seasons, I believe that the Canadians going out and making a blockbuster trade or signing a free agent is not going to happen in the next year, and I'm not so sure it's going to happen in the next two. But the sooner those players are no longer here, that can accelerate it. But chances are you're not going to be able to part ways with those players. Am I on to something here? How do you see the timeline exactly?
Those contracts are really difficult to move. I'm not sure there's an appetite for buyouts on either player, but that would be something management would have to ask ownership the permission for. I mean that, Tony, that's substantial money, and it's U.S. money. The Canadian dollar is not overly strong right now, as you know. So even though nobody's going to feel sorry for the owners of these NHL teams in Canada, it's still significant. You got to clear buyouts in particular through your ownership group. I don't know how they're going to make it work, but what you need to have are chips in the game. So the Canadians have chips in the game, especially on defense. There's always people looking for young defensemen, especially good mobile young defensemen. The Canadians have a bunch of those. People are always looking for depth goaltending. You know, if Fowler can produce the way we think he will, and a lot of people think he will, maybe that makes one of the Canadiens goaltenders who are playing in the NHL now dispensable in a trade. So there's going to be ways that the Canadiens can do it. But in order to do those deals, you got to have chips in the game. And the Canadiens now, after all this pain and suffering, have established the fact that they have chips in the game to make something happen.
The challenge is, if you ask fans, and I get it, the fans are not the GM. The fans are there to cheer, but they're going to want to part ways with the defensemen who are up and down from Laval and maybe 5, 6, 7 on your depth chart. There's not a lot of value there. I mean, other teams, they're not stupid. If they're if other teams are going to be willing to part ways with an offensive player, let's say, and they want to get a defenseman to shore up their D, they're going to ask for Gouley.
Well, Gouley's untouchable. Okay, so I see your point. He's untouchable. Here's what I will tell you. There was just a trade made between Colorado and Buffalo. Colorado was not in a rush to trade Bowen Byram, but they had no choice. And they knew that they couldn't count on Ryan Johansson as a number two center there. So they went and traded Bowen Byram for Casey Mittelstadt. It's a pure hockey trade. Part of why they had to trade Bowen Byram was trending upwards so much internally, he was going to be looking at Cale Makar and Devon Toews for money. They could not afford it on the cap with all the other players they have. So that's why they made a hockey deal. I'm convinced because of cap-related issues, and I know the cap's going up by $4 million or close enough, you're going to be able to make deals because of cap instance, just like what Colorado and Buffalo did. And I don't know if that deal gets enough exposure, but that's why Colorado knew how good Bowen Byram was. They knew, but they had no choice. They want to win the cup. You know, they want to win the cup. And so they knew they needed to stabilize the second center position. And so they also knew they had enough depth on defense that they could do it. And that's why they went and did what they did.
How good a second line centerman do you think Mittelstadt is?
In that situation, he's probably really good. Because one of the guys they have there that's going to really help him is Valeri Nichushkin. He's a really good player, Tony. And, you know, I know he's had his trials and tribulations away from the ice, but I will tell you right now, those two guys look really good together. And then you look at, you know, guys like Miles Wood and Ross Colton and Brandon Duhaime and Yakov Trenin. This is a really hard – that's going to be a really hard team to play against in the playoffs. Really hard.
Hey, Pierre, I've heard you talk about the Colorado Avalanche on more than one occasion lately and with a lot of admiration. You've never told me this, but I get the feeling that you think that Colorado is the Stanley Cup favorite right now. Am I wrong?
I wish they had done something more in goal. I do. Gorgiev has to prove that he can win in the playoffs. He has yet to do that. And I don't know if Pavel Francouz is coming back or not, but if he comes back, then I say they're okay. If he doesn't, I'm worried about their goaltending. Everywhere else, I think they can compete with any team in the league in a 7-game series.
Yeah. You no longer need the best goaltender to win the Stanley Cup, though. You just need the goalie to get hot.
Or stay healthy.
Yeah.
You know, I think if they ever had an injury to Gorgiev and Francouz couldn't play, I don't think they could win.
Got it. All right, okay. So on that note, let's talk about adding veterans to this group. Jeff Gordon talked about it yesterday.
You kind of know when you can start to you build your young foundation, but when do you know that you can start to add in really high-end veteran talent to what you're building? Or is it just everything's unique and there's really no blueprint for that?
Well, I think the team tells you, right? Like by the way we're playing. You know, I think, Kent and I spent a lot of time and Marty talking about when's the right time to go that way. Maybe it's free agency, maybe it's a huge trade. I think you're always looking for something to add. We're always looking to be better. We're always looking for a trade that would be really helpful to move this thing along. So I don't know. I do think it's every place is unique. You know, I feel like in New York, the Breadman, he was a free agent. He did want to come to New York, right? He had history with JD. There was a lot there going in our direction, right? And you get a player that gets 90, 100 points, right? Kind of helps your lineup move it forward, right? So, yeah. So, you know, those are the things you have to decide. And listen, it's not 100% unanimous. We got to get the Breadman. It was like, hey, are we ready for this? We had a lot of conversations about that, you know? And so I think that's where we'll be this summer, try to figure out, you know, who's there, who's out there to add. Those are the kind of things. But, yeah, you're always looking, you know, we're very mindful how hard it is to find skill, right?
Yeah.
And so we'll be, you know, we'll be looking for that.
Are you are you closer to that point than maybe you thought you would be at this point? Are you starting to feel it sort of arrive?
Well, I mean, listen, I'd be naive to say when we got here, there wasn't more here than I thought, right? So a lot of the guys that are pretty successful, like Cole Caulfield, we didn't draft Cole Caulfield, right? Like Mark Bergevin did, right? There's a lot left here for us. So I'd be like, you know, I think I'd be selfish and ignorant to think that it's all us, right? So
yeah,
there's some things here that were left, and, you know, we're trying to, you know, get the most out of the guys who are here that are going to be really good players, and then we're trying to add to it. That's what we're doing. But are we for – I don't know.
We're very mindful that we want to add skill. Mm-hmm. He says skill. Guess who the first player who comes to my mind is? The guy that we've been talking about for the last couple of months. So, you know, you've told us that you've watched Trevor Zegras play hockey since he was 12 or 13 years old. Do you think that comes back up on the table this summer?
It could. The only thing is a fit. And I'll tell you what I mean by a fit. Zegras and Caulfield play together at the National Team Development Program. I think they're pretty good chums. But if you look at Anaheim right now, their organizational fit is not really good with Montreal in terms of what Montreal's strength is and what Anaheim. And I'm talking about depth with young defense. So the depth of Anaheim's young defense is really good. And I can tell you right now, they're trying to sign Ian Moore, who's a junior captain at Harvard University. So if they sign and add him, they're just backlogged with young D. And I don't know how Montreal has a fit offensively that helps Anaheim, unless Anaheim's prepared to take Josh Anderson's contract, which I would be surprised if they would want to do that.
Montreal's got a ton of draft picks, though, and Anaheim and Pavrobeek, and notably Martin Madden Jr., do pretty well with them, Pierre.
Oh, no, Martin Madden Jr. has done a tremendous job. He's one of those names. Good on you, Tony, knowing it. Their draft board has been really, really strong for a long time. They've got another player, Western Michigan University right now, Sam Colangelo, who started his college career at Northeastern. He's close to 30 goals playing in the NCHC, which is one of the top conferences in the country. That's an amazing – so he was a second-round pick. Ian Moore was a second-round pick. Martin Madden Jr. has done a fantastic job scouting with his staff out there in Anaheim, no question.
Pierre, in ending, final word, Jeff Gordon talked about the Habs rebuild. Do we have that?
Everyone says, how long is it going to be? How long will this take? And it's different. It's different everywhere. I feel like in New York, it didn't take that long, right? We went through a couple tough years, but we were on the come pretty good. We had the, you know, unfortunately we had COVID that slowed it down, but we still made that play in. And, you know, we got swept by Carolina and then the following year. But good things were happening there, you know, fairly quickly, and getting the bread man, Fox. Some things turned that place around pretty quick. So, you know, we need some luck, and we need some really good scouting, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Is the next step, Pierre, an obvious one, or they don't have to take the next step this summer? I mean, you know, those who want the rebuild, there's a lot of people who want it to be overly accelerated, and there's quite a few people in this province who don't want the rebuild at all. We're saying, enough of this. It's 3 years. They don't make the playoffs. Let's go trade somebody. Let's go turn this around. They got to make the playoffs next year. It's a good thing he doesn't understand everything in French, Pierre, else he would lose his mind, because there's certain members of the media who are saying, enough of this rebuild stuff. We can't do this anymore. But I think they're talking more for themselves than they are talking for. So do they have to do something this summer? Is a baby step going to be good enough? And if so, what can that baby step be?
I think they need to add offense. I really think they need that offense. I think part of the offense that will be added will be power play presence led by Lane Hudson on the back end. I think that will help energize the power play. So that's positive. But could they use another scoring forward or two? The answer is yes, they could. Tony, just to build off your point about the media, it's a pretty good story. Scotty Bowman once told me, I was concerned when we were talking about trading Mark Recchi and Paul Coffey to Philadelphia. And I said, Scotty, what are the media going to write? And he said to me, Pierre, this is a story I learned from Sam Pollock a long time ago. So I listened. As soon as he said Sam Pollock, I was listening. He says, you don't need them when you're winning, and they can't help you when you're losing. So don't worry about them. It's pretty good advice. Wow. Pretty good advice, right?
Yeah.
You don't need them when you're winning, and they can't help you when you're losing. Pretty good.
No better way to end the show than words of wisdom like that, Pierre. I don't have to tell you how informative the last hour was with you. It always is every time we speak. And for me, it's a real privilege, Pierre. Thank you very much.
I would always do your show. I'm really grateful for you having me on, Tony. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. People, you have to watch the Sick Podcast, The Eye Test, with Jimmy Murphy and Pierre Maguire. Yesterday's show with Jeff Gordon, I think within a couple of hours is probably going to hit, or maybe even, you know, by tomorrow, we'll hit over 10,000 views on YouTube alone. We played some of the clips, but there's a lot more Montreal Canadiens talk, and you really get to have a better understanding of who Jeff Gordon is in that conversation. So subscribe to that channel, follow them. Once again, it's absolutely free. Special thanks to Energy Transportation Group. Special thanks to Labitta TV. Special thanks to Playground. Special thanks to all of you watching on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Thank you to everyone who's going to be listening over the next couple of days. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. If you like the show, like it, share it with your friends. Comment sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. And leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It really is our way of feeling the love. Unfortunately, we will not be on tomorrow night because the Canadians have a late start in Vancouver. But we'll be back, same time, same place, on Friday. The Sick Podcast. For Agnello, Sammy, and Juliana at Master Control, they're Cavallaro. Special thanks to Pierre Maguire for coming on. I'm Marinaro.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.